speak about, you have everything on the head up, so I think I wouldn't even have to introduce our speaker. It's Rob Arnatan from Toronto. And, well, you know, it's a handout. He's going to talk about homomorphic expansion and double bonds.
So, yeah, indeed, everything is on the handout. And why should I talk, actually, man? There is also, this is the handout. And maybe I'll start by what the common view of knot theory is and what my talk is not about. So, you know, you think of knots as like a store, a bucket full of candies, okay? There are lots of, each knot is a candy of its own. I mean, here is a better, higher resolution image of the same thing. So lots and lots of candies, and you can just, you know, each one is slightly different, a different color, a different taste, maybe different artificial coloring. And then the task of knot theory is to tell these candies apart and catalog them, and maybe at the end make a big knot atlas that will have a page on each one, or on each one with some information on each one in that page, okay? And in fact, if you go to www.katlas.org, you'll see just that, okay? But you see, candies are bad for your health, and in general, in cooking classes, you don't talk about the, or in good cooking classes, you don't talk about the end products, but rather about the ingredients that make them, from which you make them, and or maybe about the meals that you make by combining several of these candies together. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that I care about algebra. I care about not the end product, the knots, but rather about the tiny pieces from which I make knots and how these are pieced together, okay? And now more specifically about my abstract. So I'm going to tell you about something called homomorphic expansions, okay? And this is pure algebra. The notion, even though not well known, it's extremely fundamental and exists absolutely everywhere. It's completely general, so incredibly general. And you can always ask, does there exist a homomorphic expansion? So first I'll tell you a little bit about homomorphic expansions in general. Then I'll switch gears completely and tell you about a variant of knot theory. So not quite about knots, but rather about two-dimensional knots or of a certain kind that live in R4. So that will be part two of three parts, okay? And then the third part will be to put the two things together and see what comes out. And what will come out is some low algebra, which is some elementary things about Lie algebra theory, but also some high algebra, which is some rather deep things about Lie algebra theory. So that's the plan, okay? So anyway, let's talk about expansions. And as I mentioned, or homomorphic expansions, as I mentioned, homomorphic expansions, the subject, makes sense in any algebraic structure. So what's an algebraic structure in general? In general, an algebraic structure is a collection of sets, okay? So O1, O2, O3, O4, so these sets, you should be thinking, well, spaces maybe, you should be thinking of them as containing objects. And then this, a generalized algebraic structure will also have in it maps going from one set to another, or a certain specification of maps going from one set to another, but possibly also, so these are unary operations, but possibly also binary operation. So psi 2 in this picture is a binary operation that takes an object of kind 1 and an object of kind 2 and produces an object of kind 3. Okay? There could be also zeronary operations, or nullary operations, I think it's called. So a nullary operation is an operation that produces an output without getting an input, so it's just a constant. So maybe you specify some constant 1 in this set and some other constant sigma in the other set, and so on. Okay, so that's an algebraic structure. Oh, and possibly there are also some axioms that govern these operations. So examples, a group is an algebraic structure. It has only one set, maybe three operations, a nullary operation called the identity, so a constant called the identity, a binary operation called multiplication, and a unary operation called invert an element. And then there are some axioms. Okay? A vector space is also an algebraic structure. Okay, it has a field which is in itself an algebraic, actually a field is not an algebraic structure. Because there is a unique element that has no inverse, zero. So sorry, let's speak about modules over a ring. Modules over a ring are an algebraic structure. Okay, in this sense. Okay? But also a group homomorphism. So a group homomorphism, G goes to H, is an algebraic structure with two groups with their binary and unary operations and so on, and also a map from one group to another. And likewise, a long exact sequence of groups is an algebraic structure. So I mean, so it's a huge collection, okay? Now, as an aside, in my story, I will always assume that you can add elements of the same kind. So all of these kinds, sets, are Z modules. If they're not Z modules, you make them Z modules by allowing formal linear combinations. Okay? So it's not a serious limitation assuming that everything is a Z module, because things that are not Z modules can be made into Z modules automatically. And then extend all operations to be multilinear, or linear, or bilinear, or multilinear in general. Okay? So that's the degree of generality in which I'm talking. Okay, the next thing that I want to tell you about is about associated graded spaces. Okay? So suppose you have a filtered algebraic structure, let's call it K in anticipation for it being knots later on. Okay? So K is an algebraic structure, meaning it's maybe a collection of sets, but I'm still denoting it by a single letter. And then there are operations that start in K and end in K. But again, this is a oversimplification. Really, I mean multilinear, binary, unary, many kinds of operations going from K to K, or from various parts of K into various other parts of K. And then to say that it is filtered is to say that it comes with a so-called decreasing filtration, so a substructure K0, substructure meaning just a subset or a sublinear space for each kind of module, of objects. Okay? So, you know, if you look in this diagram, you get a subspace here, a subspace here, a subspace here, a subspace here, which is closed under all operations. So this is what a sub-algebraic structure is. And now, if you have a nested collection of submodules, K0 containing K1, containing K2, containing K3, and so on, that's a filtration on an algebraic structure. Now, whenever you have a filtered algebraic structure, you can make a graded algebraic structure out of it. Namely, you look at the so-called ger of K, or later I will sometimes call it proj of K. Okay? So it's the direct sum of modding out each degree in the filtration by the next one. Okay? So It's K1 divided by K2, plus K2 divided by the next one, plus K3 divided by the next one. If you count dimensions, it appears as if K should have the same dimension as Ger of K, at least when the dimensions are finite, because every term here appears once in the numerator and once in the denominator, so all terms cancel except the K0, which is just K. Okay? So it appears as if this should be of the same size. An expansion is an explicit choice of an isomorphism between the two. So, or even more specifically, an expansion is a map from K to Ger of K, which respects the filtration, which means that it takes elements of degree 2 in the filtration to elements of degree 2 and up. The and up is important, so I'm allowing it to be 2 and higher in the lower level, okay? So that it covers the identity. So if you've seen graded objects before, I'll just explain that the associated graded is a functor, so you can, if you look at Z, you can compute Ger of Z. Ger of Z will go from Ger of K to Ger of K, which is again a K, and I just want this map to be the identity. Okay? So if you haven't seen that before, ignore it. Okay? So anyway, that's what an expansion is. It's an explicit choice of an isomorphism of the object with its associated grade. Now, the operations on K automatically induce operations on Ger of K. Basically, just like if you have a product on a group and a subgroup, then you get a product on the quotient.
We need the subgroup to be normal, right?
And indeed, these operations might not satisfy the same axiom. Okay, so these operations always induce operations on Ger of K, but if you started from a group, what you get might not be a group. Okay, it will have a binary operation, but it will satisfy a different collection of axioms. Okay. Anyway, a homomorphic expansion is an expansion which, in addition, intertwines the operations. So which, in addition, maps a product here to a product here. Okay, that's what a homomorphic expansion is. And in general, they are expensive and hard to find. And we will see in a minute examples, a few more examples.
So
but maybe before...
So the expansion is a bit like quantization.
It has relationship with quantization. You can view... it has relationship with quantization. I don't want to say, okay, too much more. But again, it's vastly more general. It's absolutely, totally more general. Totally general, okay? But again, this is a colloquium talk, so I'm not assuming that you've seen associated graded spaces, and I'm not assuming that all of this is familiar. So unless you tell me that I should skip this slide, I want to give you an overview of what this really means, okay, or how I view this. Okay, so this is just my particularly sick imagination, okay? So here is an example of a K. K is the set of all black and white two-dimensional projections of reality, okay? So here is, otherwise known as pictures, okay? So here is an example. But I really mean infinite resolution pictures. So every point in the plane has a brightness associated with it. Or if you wish, pictures are linear functionals, roughly speaking, or functions, on the space whose points are the points of the space. Are the points of space. Now, if you remember old time web connections, right, when we were still connecting over modems, when you would view a picture, first you would get a kind of rough version of it, then a clearer version of it, then a clearer and eventually, well, a clearer and clearer version would download as you kind of wait longer for your modem to finish its act. Okay? Now, these rougher versions are elements in K-mode filtration, where the filtration is defined by, so say K4 would be defined by declaring all points that belong to the same kind of generalized pixel, bigger pixel, to be the same. Okay? So functions on K-mode K4 would have to be constant on that square. Okay? And then K3 would mean you impose more relations, so it's a more relations, so it's a bigger subset, a bigger sub-object. And K5 would be even smaller sub-object, so modding out by K5 would give you an even higher resolution image. Okay? So this is these are the various quotients, so this is the image of reality inside each of these quotients. Now, the associated graded is what gets transmitted at every step of the process. Okay? So, or rather, it's the information that needs to be transmitted at every step of the process. Namely, so in a certain step of the process, you might need, so saying step, I don't know where how my indexing works, let's call this step 3 of the process. In step 3 of the process, you already transmitted the previous image. So you've already transmitted something in K mode K3, and you want to transmit an image, or you want to transmit the image of your image in K mode K4, which has more information, but you don't want to retransmit the data that you've already sent. So you only want to transmit what lives in the kernel of the map from K mode K4 to K mode K3. Okay, this is the complementary to what you've already transmitted. Okay? Now do a little bit of linear algebra, and the kernel of this is K3 mode K4. So K3 mode K4 is what gets transmitted in the third step of the process. An expansion is a choice of how to actually transmit the information. Okay? So an expansion is a map from K to GER of K, and it's a map in which you actually choose, okay, if you compose it with the projection on this, it's what you transmit in the first step. If you compose it on the projection on this, it's what you transmit in the second step, and so on. And this choice is far from canonical. It's not unique, right? Because if I send you the brightness level on this rectangle, in order to send the information here, 4 brightness levels, I only need to send you 3 of them. Because I already sent you the average, so the total, if you wish. So I know only need to send three pieces of information after I've sent this piece. But the choice of which 3 is non-trivial. Okay, there are many ways to make that choice. Okay, so an expansion is far from unique. Okay, and by the way, it's usually wrong to choose a particular 3 because of stability considerations. You would normally choose to transmit a certain 3 linear combinations rather than just 3 of the values. Okay? So an expansion is a choice of a progressive scan algorithm. Okay? And finally, you might want your choice to be compatible with various operations that you could do on images, so cropping or rotating or adjoining two images and so on. Okay? So in general, in mathematics, an expansion would mean that you get a view of a certain mathematical discipline which gets clearer and clearer with time, or clearer and clearer as you look at higher and higher degrees. And the point of it is that if you restrict yourself to a small degree, the view is not quite clear, but it still has some information about the original image, the original object. Now again, if you think this situation might be rare, filtered objects, well, filtered objects are everywhere. So basically, they're cheap and plenty. So if you take any algebraic structure and allowing it formal linear combinations, you can always look at the ideal generated by differences. So essentially, at those linear combinations in which the sum of coefficients is equal to zero. This is called the augmentation ideal. And then you can look at powers of that ideal. Powers meaning use all all available algebraic operations to combine m elements of the ideal together. Okay? So the mth power of the augmentation ideal will give you a substructure, and these substructures will go smaller and smaller and smaller, and therefore you get a filtration always. Okay, on any algebraic structure, you automatically get a filtration. So the situation is not so rare. Okay? And as an aside, or as a further example, just let me talk about two well-known algebraic structures and what happens to them. Okay? So the first one is a group. So the projectivization of a group, sorry, so I alternate between calling this associated graded and projectivization. So the projectivization of a group will be again a graded set, but with an operation, and it turns out to be an associative, a graded associative algebra. Okay? So an expansion for a group would be a map from the group to a graded associated algebra, sorry, to a graded associative algebra, which maps the product in the group to the product in the algebra. Okay? And again, sometimes these things exist, sometimes they don't. Anyway, a second example, so a quandl. A quandl is a bit less known algebraic object, but it's really fun. Anybody knows what a quandl is? So quandls are basically, okay, look at the group. It has, in addition to, well, it also has a conjugation operation. Take this operation and axiomatize it. And let's see what axioms does it satisfy. So you can check that in a group, well, conjugation satisfies that if you take A conjugated by B, and then conjugate the whole thing by C, the result is A conjugated by C conjugated by B conjugated by C. This is a little bit of group theory. So now let's rewrite this with notation, with the following notation. So instead of writing A to the B, let's write it as A up B. Okay? And then this becomes A up B up C is equal to A up C up B up C. And that's a lovely axiom to impose on an algebraic object. So a quandl is a set Q along with a binary operation, so two inputs, one output, called up, so that this operation satisfies this axiom. Self-distributivity, I think it's called. And here it's written with X, Y, and Z instead of A, B, C, but it's the same, I hope. Okay? So one example for a quandl is take a group and look at conjugation. But there are many quandls that do not come from a group. Anyway, what's the projectivization of a quandl? So it will be a linear or a graded space with a binary operation, and you can check that the binary operation that you will get will always satisfy the Jacobi identity. Okay? So the projectivization of a quandl is a Lie algebra, always. Okay? And you know, this really reflects the fact that the bracket in a Lie group, sorry, if you have a Lie group, the bracket does not come from the product of the group, but rather from conjugation. It rather measures how much the product fails to be commutative. So this is sort of the easiest way to see it, in a way.
So what the word quandl means?
A quandl is a set with a binary. Oh, what does the word mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I have no idea.
Where it comes from?
I don't know.
Word.
I don't know.
It comes from black.
Okay. So I'm done with the first third of the talk. Can I move to the second third? Completely disjoint and unrelated. Okay, this was general algebra. And now I want to talk a little bit about topology. So I'm going to tell you about ribbon two knots. Okay? So a ribbon two knot is a two-dimensional surface embedded in R4. Okay? But which also bounds a handle body. So, you know, if the surface is a torus, I want to look at embeddings of the torus into R4, but I also want to consider such embeddings along with an embedding of the interior of the torus, the solid handle body whose boundary is the torus. And then I want to allow only a certain type of singularities. So sorry, I said embeddings. The torus is embedded. The interior is allowed to have singularities. Okay? But I want only to allow a certain type of singularities. Now, rather than explaining what these singularities are, I'll show you a few examples. And I'll show the examples by going one dimension down. Okay? So instead of embedding tubes, I will embed bands. Now, how do you recover the tube from the band? So the tube is in R3. What you do is you, in the fourth dimension, you go up and make the tube narrower and narrower and narrower until it closes. And then you also go down and do the same. Okay? So, here is an example of an allowed singularity. So, first of all, in R4, these two tubes that are represented by this picture are not intersecting. Because, well, I could make, and let's just, the convention is that the inner one in this picture is always narrower. So basically, in R4, if you go up in R4, this band closes before the outer band. Okay? So they don't intersect. Okay? So this is an allowed singularity. This, on the other hand, is not an allowed singularity. Now, you take all of these things, modulo so-called isotopies, modulo topological equivalence, and the primary point, the main point, is that in R4, this is equivalent to that. Basically, both of these are tubes that have nothing in them. So you can shrink them until they're really, really, really narrow. So they're really just strings in R4, but there are no knots in R4. In R4, an overcrossing is the same as an undercrossing, because you can go and sort of flip them in the fourth dimension. So in R4, this is equivalent to that, even though in R3, in the picture, it doesn't look equivalent. Okay? However, this is not equivalent to that. That's a different situation in R4. Here is a different picture for the same thing. A different way of visualizing tubes in R4 is to look at it as a movie. So it will be a movie of rings in R3. If you have a ring in R3 and you wait, you watch it as a movie, it spans a tube, right? So the two types of crossings that appear here, this one and that one correspond to the following two movies, okay? The right one, the so-called virtual crossing, corresponds to two tubes trading places by going outside of each other, by just trading places. Sorry, two rings trading places by going somehow by trading places. Okay, and of course, topologically, it doesn't matter if they trade places that way or that way, because you can interpolate by going around that way. Okay? However, the real crossing is the two tubes trading places by one going through the other. Okay? So, in some sense, so you can view the topology that I'm going to talk about also as the topology of flying rings, of movies of flying rings. Okay? And I guess there are a few other things that you could do with surfaces. So you could cap them, and you could do it, you could have a piece that looks like a Klein bottle, and there are various vertices where three tubes meet, but I guess I don't want to talk about it at the moment. Okay? It's just extremely important details, but at the moment these are details. Okay? And now let's turn it into an algebraic structure. Okay? So first of all, I want to tell you about ordinary knots and how they are algebraic, an algebraic structure. So ordinary knots form a so-called planar algebra, or more precisely, ordinary tangles form a planar algebra. A planar algebra has again, it's an algebraic structure that has many spaces. Okay, not like a group which is just has a single set of objects. It has many spaces. Okay, so for example, well, it has a space for each specification of a number of legs. If you specify a number of legs, the space of tangles corresponding to this number of legs is the space of all ways of drawing essentially a knot in the plane that connects this number of legs. Now, so these are just the spaces. Now, what are the operations? So if you have a planar picture in which you have, which looks like a disk with a number of holes, but also a planar way of connecting these holes, or connecting points on the edges of these holes with edges on the boundary, okay, that defines an operation. So in this particular case, I have two holes, so that's a binary operation. And what it does is it takes two tangles, two input tangles, places the first one into number one hole, so the numbers have to match, places the second one into number two hole, and if you look at the output is again a bigger tangle. So that's the composition. Okay? So a planar algebra is anything that has a set for each number of legs and operations corresponding to these planar diagrams, planar connection diagrams. Okay? And, well, one example is tangles, but there are others. Okay? So, in fact, a different way of saying knot theory is to say knot theory is the planar algebra with one generator, the crossing, because clearly if you have a crossing, you can compose, you know, if you have a single crossing, you can compose them in a planar way to get an arbitrary complicated knot. So it has a single generator and three relations, the so-called Rademeister moves, and you can check these relations topologically, but algebraically, this relation, for example, just means that that if you compose three copies of the crossing, or compose three copies of the crossing in a different way, you get the same output. Okay? So knot theory becomes a, so once you allow yourself to speak about planar algebras, knot theory becomes a theory of generators modulo relations. Likewise, trivalent tangles. So trivalent tangles are like tangles, except you also allow trivalent vertices in your knotted object. Okay? So trivalent tangles are, there are two types of generators, the crossing and the vertex, the same relations as before, but also an additional relation which says that you can slide stuff over the vertex. And in fact, here, you can also add a unary operation, which is the operation of unzipping an edge. So if you have an edge, you can cut it along in the middle and get a different tangle. Okay? So likewise, W knots. So W knots are the things, the two-dimensional things in R4 that I talked about previously, can be thought of as a planar algebra with generators, relations, and also a few unary operations, which you should not concern yourself with at this moment. So, okay, sorry, the generators I already specified. Here are the two generators, a crossing and a senseless crossing, which corresponds to this. Okay? And then you can check that there are some relations as well. So one relation is, so some relations look like the Rademeister rules. And some other relations are, well, this is another relation. Okay? So you can, essentially in this picture, it's you can slide an overcrossing, or you can slide two overcrossings over a so-called virtual crossing or a senseless crossing. Topologically, it corresponds to the following fact. If you have a ring flying in R3, I guess I need a volunteer. Can you just hold it? Just stand up and hold it. So, you know, I can, and I have two smaller rings, I can pass across the two smaller rings and then let them fly through the big one. Or I could let them fly through the big one and then cross them. And the two are the same. However, the opposite relation written over here does not hold. So there is some breaking of symmetry. So in other words, if I have a small ring, can you hold these two? Sorry. Really what this amounts to is to say that passing through one and then through the other is not the same as passing through the other and then through the one. Okay? So again, the details are not terribly important and are obviously don't fit in 1 hour, but the point is that you can write it in terms of generators and relations, and they involve this kind of lovely pictures. There are also some unitary operations which I don't want to talk about, and now I want to connect the two parts of the talk. Okay? So I'm getting into part three of the talk. So, if K is the planar algebra that I just described, Gurk K, I claim, or proj K, so the associated graded of K, which automatically exists because it's an algebraic object, okay? So the associated graded of K, also known as A, will turn out to be a space of diagrams. So it will be a space of, well, so these are also diagrams. These are these planar pictures with crossings and so on. But this will be really combinatorial graphs with bounded complexity. So here it's very hard to tell whether two diagrams represent the same object or not. But this is just pure combinatorics. If two objects look the same, they are the same, and that's all. Okay? So the associated graded will be diagrams modulo relations which preserve the degree. Now, in general, diagrams often represent formulas. Let me do it the other way around. Formulas are really diagrams. So for example, if you write the formula sine squared plus cosine squared is equal to 1, well, the left-hand side really means plus, and then on both sides you have a power, okay? And then on the left you have a sine applied to x, and on the right you have a 2. And here, again, you have power, and on the left you have cosine of x, and on the right you have 2. So really, a formula is really a graph, okay? And an identity is the fact that certain graphs is an identity between graphs. So it will turn out that in our case, the graphs that appear here correspond to formulas written in Lie algebras. So roughly speaking, to every graph that appears here, you get a formula that describes an element in the universal enveloping algebra of a certain Lie algebra, or something that looks like universal enveloping algebra. Well, the specifics are not right now, okay? Now, this is topology, this is combinatorics, and the map that goes from formulas to their evaluations is what we call Lie algebra. It's Lie algebras and basic stuff about Lie algebras. Now let me tell you what high algebra is. Suppose you want an expansion. An expansion is a map from K to A, which is a homomorphism, or which is homomorphic. Okay? So one way of getting a map from K to A is to define, let's call it Z, is to define Z on the generators of K. So you guess the values of Z on the generators of K. In our case, there are primarily two generators, primarily one generator, the crossing. Okay, but since I also allow a few types of vertices, it's not just the crossing, but also some vertices. So basically you have to assign values to the generators so that they satisfy relations, so that they solve equations. So finding a Z going from here to here means finding objects, finding elements here, which solve equations here. But then, if you map it using Lie algebra to Lie theory, this amounts to finding Lie algebraic gadgets, elements, that satisfy certain equations that can be written in terms of Lie algebras. These equations turn out to be high algebra. In different cases, depending which class of knots you start from, they turn out to be various deeply studied and important equations that can be written about Lie algebras. So if you start from ordinary knot theory, it turns out to be the so-called Drinfeld associate pentagon equation and similar equations. If you start from so-called V knots, which I didn't discuss here, you'll get stuff related to quantum groups. And if you start with W knots, which is what I'm talking about right now, you'll get stuff related to the so-called Kashiwara-Verne conjecture, which by now is a theorem, due to Alexeyev and Menken, I believe. Anyway, so I want to tell you a tiny bit more about that. Okay?
Do you give by any chance something much simpler like Campbell-Baker Hausdorff?
Campbell-Baker Hausdorff is in fact hidden. Campbell-Baker-Hausdorff is essentially the W case reduced a bit further. It's an easier version of what I'm talking about now. Okay? So, in fact, this is Campbell, BCH, Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff. Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff is this picture. And then the real difficulty is with the other two pictures. Okay? But let me be more, let me say more. So, here is a non-theoretic statement. The non-theoretic statement is there exists a homomorphic expansion on this algebraic structure which I described, which is trivalent W tangles. So the thing with generators and relations as above, which again represents something two-dimensional in R4. Okay? In particular, well, if such a homomorphic expansion exists, then Z, the homomorphic expansion, should be defined on the generators, and again there are a couple other generators, and it should satisfy the equations that these generators have to satisfy. So this equation, and again, which topologically is obvious, and the other two equations which I didn't discuss today. Okay? And then I claim that if you use Low algebra to push this to something about Lie theory, it becomes a statement, the Kashiwara-Wern statement, which roughly speaking says that under good conditions, which are not even fully specified above, but I definitely don't want to state them, convolutions, the convolution of functions on a Lie group is the same as convolution on the Lie algebra. So really, it says that there is some specific map which takes functions on the Lie algebra, sorry, functions on the Lie group to functions on the Lie algebra, and then the statement is that if you take convolution with respect to Lebesgue's measure on the Lie algebra, it corresponds to convolution with respect to Haar measure on the group. Okay, and it sounds basic and structural, but it's actually a very hard statement. Okay? So I guess in the remaining, how much time do I have?
Another 10.
Okay, so in the remaining 10 minutes, I want to at least vaguely show you how it could possibly be related. It doesn't seem related, but I claim it's essentially the same. Okay? So here is how. I guess first step, okay, if I want to construct a homomorphic expansion, so just to remind you, a homomorphic expansion is a homomorphic map. Why do the chalks always disappear? Z going from knots to, or from our brand of knots, W knots, to the associated graded, so GER of WK, which I will call A, or maybe A up W often. Okay? So I have to, I'm looking for a Z of that kind. Obviously, I first have to understand the target space. So let's start by understanding the target space. The target space involves looking at K, or rather the augmentation ideal of K. So I think I called it K1. Looking at the mth power of it, modding out by the m plus first power, that's the degree m piece, and then taking the direct sum over all m's. Now, an element in the augmentation ideal is really a difference of two things. So it's one thing taken with a plus and another one taken with a minus sign. Okay? So where these two things are various W naughts. So the typical example would be you take the crossing and subtract from it the senseless crossing, the so-called virtual crossing. That would be an element of the augmentation ideal because it's a combination of things with sum of coefficients equal to zero. Now, an element of the augmentation ideal raised to the third power will be something that you get by taking this difference and multiplying it by another difference of the same kind. And then, you know, I'm looking at the third power, so you also multiply it by yet another difference of the same kind. With what multiplication? The multiplications you have at hand, so the planar algebra multiplication. So, here is an example of a so-called 2-cube. So a 2-cube is something in K1 squared. I took, now the pointer disappeared. Oh, here, thanks. So I take a difference of a crossing with a senseless crossing, and I take another such difference, and then I combine them by adding lines in between. Okay, and in fact also a generator, which is not a difference, right? The meaning of ideal is that you, right, that you are also allowed to multiply by ordinary elements, okay? So basically, here is a 2-cube, okay? So now I want to look at 2-cubes modulo 3-cubes. But you see, I claim that in 2-cubes modulo 3-cubes, the topology disappears. Because if I look at pictures of this nature and mod out by pictures in which I allow one further difference, then in particular, I allow flipping this from a senseless crossing to an overcrossing or to an undercrossing. So in other words, it just doesn't matter what it is. Okay? So in 2-cubes modulo 3-cubes, all you get is the combinatorics of how these things are placed along the skeleton of the tangle, and you don't care about the topology anymore. Now, a way of summarizing the combinatorics is using so-called arrow diagrams. So, you look at the skeleton of this tangle in this particular case is one Y shape and one line. Okay, so it's a Y shape and a line. And I just specify with arrows that this part of the skeleton is mapped to be over that part of the skeleton, while this part is mapped to be over that part. And really, the arrow means a difference. It really means this over that minus the two pass through each other indifferently. Okay? So a picture like this represents a cube, and I don't need to specify anything further because all other things that might appear in a topologicization of this are modded out, are irrelevant. Okay, so what we found is that there is a map from diagrams, from arrow diagrams. There is a certain map from arrow diagrams into this. Okay, a diagram can represent a cube. And what I claim is that this map has a kernel. It satisfies some relations. This is similar to the way to the way Quandles or Lie algebras came out of Quandles. So again, I wasn't sufficiently specific over there, but the Quandles satisfied relations. It satisfied the Jacobi identity. Well, there are similar relations that end up relating different arrow diagrams, which arise from the Rademeister moves on W-knot diagrams. And here is a brief summary of these relations. So, you know, if you have, but one important point is that these are graded relations. So you never have to increase complexity. So if you want to study complexity 7, you just have to list all diagrams of degree 7, so all diagrams that have exactly 7 arrows in them, and enumerate all the relations, and it's in principle a finite task. Okay, so unlike knot theory itself, which is much harder. Okay? So there are various relations, such as the STU relation, which says that, you know, a certain combination of arrows is equal to the difference of two other combinations of arrows. And again, likewise, there are some further relations of the same kind. Now, this is a colloquium and I don't want to go into the detail, just give you the flavor. So, here is another thing that you could do with these diagrams. So, given these diagrams and a finite dimensional Lie algebra G with a dual G star, you can always get given a diagram and a Lie algebra, you can canonically get an element in the universal enveloping algebra of the algebra IG, where IG is essentially the direct sum of G with its dual. So it's not quite the direct sum, it's the semi-direct product. But you should think of it as just the direct sum for this purpose, the algebra with its dual. Okay? Now, how does it work? Well, if you have an arrow diagram, you first of all choose a basis xi for the Lie algebra and a dual basis phi I for the dual of the Lie algebra. And then you label all the arrows in the diagram with English letters, so I, J, K, L, M, and N, okay? And then each vertex has three labels around it. So an I, a J, and a K in this case. So you label it with, so you take the bracket of the Lie algebra, you form the structure constants, and you put next to the vertex a copy of the structure constants, labeled with these letters. Likewise for the other vertex. And finally, along the skeleton, you just write what you see. So if you see an arrow tail with an I, you write dual element with an I. If you see an arrow head with an N, you write the Lie algebra element XN along the skeleton. And then you map this diagram to this following word. So it's a sum of structure constants times the letters you see along the skeleton. So phi I, phi j, xn, xm, phi n, phi l. This is exactly what's written here, I hope. And you interpret this sum as, well, just sum, but interpret this as an element of the universal enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra and its dual, because these are words that involve both Lie elements and their duals.
Okay. Like,
so the Casimir of a Lie algebra is a special case of this construct. The Casimir of a metrized Lie algebra or of a semi-simple Lie algebra is equal to essentially this diagram plus its opposite. Okay. So this is more general. So this includes.
Yes.
But right. This includes constructions like the Casimir, but it's much more general. So basically, you know what, to be more precise, the Casimir arises in the ordinary knot pictures, not in the W knots.
So this is not
and it really corresponds to just an undirected line.
So this is not Casimir of some G, direct some G star or something. It's not like that. Because you have IG, which contains both
so
G and G star.
What? Well, this is the, so the picture I wrote here is the Casimir of IG, okay, not the Casimir of G, okay? But in general, these pictures correspond to other canonical elements in the universal enveloping of IG, okay, of G direct summit due. Okay? And the point is that the relations that you see here, so the diagrams correspond to tensors, to element of U of G, and the relations that you see here are precisely the relations that make up in the algebra. So somewhere here is hidden the so-called Jacobi identity. So the STU relation that I mentioned before corresponds to the defining relation of the universal enveloping algebra. It's the relation that says that just the defining relation, which is x times y minus y times x is equal to the bracket of x and y. So again, you can kind of see it, right? The vertex corresponds to the correspond to the structure constants, correspond to the bracket. So this is the bracket, and this is the product taken in one order, and this is the product taken in another order. So the point is that you do get a well-defined map from A into Lie algebras. So from, or let's say differently, from arrow diagrams into universal enveloping algebras. Okay? Now, what is this good for? So, again, how is the non-theoretic statement, how does it become the Lie theoretic statement? And the point is that the way to prove that an identity of convolution, of convolutions holds, well, you have to show that a certain integral on the left is equal to a certain integral on the right. Convolutions are essentially integrals. You unwrap it and you look at it very, very carefully, and it turns out that you need to, in a certain sense, prove that the integral of e to the x plus y is equal to the integral of e to the x times e to the y. And again, all of this has to be interpreted very carefully. But the point is that in order to show the equality of integrals, you have to find a measure-preserving transformation. Or one way of doing it is to find a measure-preserving transformation that carries one integrand to the other. And I'm ignoring all sorts of Jacobians, so it's really not a measure-preserving transformation, but a transformation with a certain prescribed compression. But roughly speaking, you have to find a measure-preserving transformation from the Lie algebra cross itself to the Lie algebra cross itself, which maps one integrand in the Kashiwara-Verne statement to another integrand. Now, the measure-preserving transformation will have a formula. The formula for the measure-preserving transformation is going to be a certain linear combination of formulas of the kind that our arrow diagrams can produce. And it turns out that the conditions that the measure-preserving transformation T has to satisfy, so it has to intertwine, it has to intertwine VCH, but it has to do several other things as well. So the conditions that T has to satisfy when written, well, turn out to be exactly the conditions that are written over here. These are exactly the, so T is the value of the vertex, and E to the X turns out to be the value of the crossing, and the conditions that the measure preserving that T has to satisfy are exactly the conditions for Z to be a homomorphic expansion. And I think at this point it's absolutely vague, but I'm not sure if I could have done any better. So maybe I'll just end by saying that this is a part of a bigger story. So I told you that, or I very, very quickly sketched the W story about W knots. But there are similar stories for ordinary knots and for so-called V knots, which are knots drawn on surfaces. And these stories correspond, you know, when you do the combinatorics and then the low algebra and then the high algebra, they correspond to various other major Lie algebraic theories. And finally, there exists some topological relations between ordinary knots and V knots and W knots. And these relations can be pushed all the way down and they become, they explain, if you wish, some relationships that exist between Kashiwara-Wern theory and quantum groups and the Dreyfus theory of associators. And, you know, I'm sorry, it really doesn't fit in 1 hour. So this is sort of a more refined picture of the same, but I'd rather skip it and move on straight to propaganda. So that's all.
Questions or comments?
Yeah.
So the convolution that you had on the left for this conjecture or statement on the Lie algebra level, what is it?
Sorry?
The functions on the Lie algebra, you had the convolution.
Yes.
So
sorry, I have to find it.
Yes.
Yes.
Like on the left hand side, so these are functions on the Lie algebra. Right. And
so convolution for the claim is that if you look, okay, so there is the exponential map going from the Lie algebra to the Lie group. You can use it to pull back functions from the Lie group to the Lie algebra. So if you use this pullback, but also multiply by some scalar, some Jacobian factor, then this pullback intertwines. So, and if you restrict your attention to invariant functions, then this pullback intertwines convolutions on the Lie algebra with convolutions on the Lie group. So I guess my functions f and g here are functions on the group. So this is convolution on the group pulled back to the Lie algebra, and this is you pull back the two functions and convolve on the Lie algebra.
So how is that defined? The convolving on the Lie algebra, how is it defined?
Lebesgue's measure. Lie algebra is a linear space.
It's just additive convolution.
Additive convolution. So the claim is that the additive convolution is equal to the Haar measure convolution if you restrict your attention to invariant functions. And actually, you know, this is also on the Lie side, it's the beginning of a bigger story. So this is, if you've seen the Duflo isomorphism is related to the Duflo isomorphism. It's a variant of the Duflo isomorphism. And
you mean the one about center of UG?
Yes. So center of U of G is isomorphic to the symmetric algebra of G. But as an algebra, not just as a vector space. So it's a non-trivial statement. It's a cousin of that.
So your approach, so this is what you described, that's a way of proving this, or what approximation?
Well, as I stated it, I'm only stating the essential equivalence of the two statements. So there is a non-theoretic statement, and there is a completely general machine that takes it into I should say it differently. There is a certain class of knots You apply to it a completely general machine that mentions not theory, no, not theory at all. Okay, this machine of algebraic of homomorphic expansions. So you apply this machine to the class of knots called W knots, and the result is a not theoretic statement, which is more or less equivalent, practically equivalent. Again, I want to be careful because there are many footnotes in everything. Okay. But it's practically equivalent to a deep theorem about Lie algebras. I didn't say anything about the proofs of either one. Okay? Now, if I were to say something about the proofs were not done by knot theory. The proofs are, well, were done by Alexeyev and Torossian and Meinrenken, who for some reason is not pictured here. By Lie methods. But if you unwrap their Lie methods, you find a lot of knot theory inside it. Okay? So, and furthermore, their proofs at the end become stories about how Kashiwara Verne is related to the Dreifeld theory of associators and again other algebraic gadgets. And if you look at these relationships, it's in fact translations of little facts on non-theory. Okay?
Great, so let me start with